Hi, I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
We're here today on a Thursday because we want to let you know about a new podcast that we think our listeners will love. It's called The Wonderland Murders, and it's from Hollywood and Crime, the people who brought you the series Young Charlie, which took us through the evolution of Charles Manson from a troubled kid to one of the most infamous criminals of all time. Like me, you might be asking yourself, what are the Wonderland Murders? But Dick remembers this highly publicized, gruesome murder.
So journey back with me, if you will, to the drug and sex-fueled world of the 1970s. Take a drug-addicted gang of criminals, add one crime kingpin, and then add the world's most famous porn star, who at that time was on a downward deadly spiral. These things all came together in a brutal, multiple murder that took place just off the Sunset Strip in the Hollywood Hills on a street called Wonderland. And I remember these quite well. It was in the early 80s when they happened. The porn star was Johnny Holmes, who was, as you said, spiraling downward. And it was a pretty brutal murders that rivaled the Manson murders, maybe even surpassed the Manson murders in their brutality.
Well, you can hear the first two episodes right now by searching for The Wonderland Murders on Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this, or by clicking on the link in our episode notes.
And if you want to hear the first six episodes before anyone else, head on over to wondery.com/PLUS. Then to keep your ears occupied as you're searching for The Wonderland Murders, here's a preview of the first episode that opens on the discovery of the four bodies.
Detective Lang arrived at the Wonderland address before Sousa, who was fighting traffic on Laurel Canyon Boulevard. It was an estimated 12 hours after the murders. The block was lined with camera trucks as news teams pressed to get information from officers. Police and news helicopters buzzed overhead. The house was a sprawling white split level with two balconies in front. Unlike most of the residences on the block, it was in disrepair. The paint was chipped and weeds peeked through cracks in the driveway. Lang noticed the gated stairway leading to the entrance of the three-story house. The deadbolt lock was electronically controlled from inside. Responding officers had found two pit bulls running free in the yard. Lang entered the house, followed by an LAPD cameraman to document the scene. The air was oppressive. The windows were shut, and the hot LA evening intensified the stench of blood and death. They had to step carefully to avoid the pools of blood on the floor. The first body they encountered was a woman's. She was lying on her side between a sofa and coffee table. Her head had been crushed by repeated blows, her face a tangle of gore and hair. Lang noticed the sprays of blood on the walls reaching up to the ceiling, apparently cast off as someone raised and brought down the weapon repeatedly. Lang looked around at the drug paraphernalia, baggies and film canisters, traces of white powder, hypodermic needles, freebasing pipes. The dead woman appeared to have no defensive wounds. The initial blow had probably landed while she was sleeping on the sofa. The pattern of blood on the lower walls indicated she'd been struck again and again after falling to the floor, likely dead or unconscious. The medical examiner would later find her body bore tattoos of a butterfly, a mushroom, a flower, Minnie Mouse. Lang moved slowly through the residence, trying to piece together what had happened. Experience told him this was an act of rage. Blood sprays and transfers were everywhere, creating a tapestry of carnage and footprints on the pillars, on the ceiling. Throughout the house, he saw empty drawers, piles of clothes haphazardly flung about. It was impossible to know yet whether the looting indicated a search for some particular valuable or was simply an opportunistic byproduct of the slaughter. The detective walked down a hall and entered a rear bedroom. A male victim lay on the bed, his head crushed by repeated blows. Bits of skull and brain reached up to the ceiling. Several hypodermics were lying around. Blood formed a large stain on the wall near where the only survivor, a woman, had been found and evacuated by an EMS team. She had suffered massive brain trauma. Somehow a fragment of her skull had been wedged in such a way as to prevent her bleeding to death. The tip of one of her fingers had been severed, probably as she attempted to ward off the blows. Doctors didn't know if she would make it through the night. In a second floor bedroom, Lang saw two more bodies, both with their heads bashed in. A male victim was partially propped against a TV stand. The television was still on. Blood on the nearby curtains extended up to the ceiling. A woman lay on her back across the bed, her legs hanging over the edge. Her head had been crushed flat to the eyebrows. A dribble of gray brain matter extruded from her nose down to her lips. A hammer lay at the edge of the bed. Several of the police officers remarked that the scene was the worst they'd ever witnessed, more grisly even than the Manson slayings a dozen years earlier. As he surveyed the carnage, there was no doubt in Tom Lang's mind. This killing was meant to send a message. No one knew yet who'd sent it or why, but this was personal. It would be 24 hours before the house would be fully canvassed and the bodies could be removed. When officers finished dusting for prints, they would find one that would prove to have particular significance. A palm print on the bed rail above the body of one of the victims.
That was just a preview of the Wonderland Murders. To hear the rest of this episode, search for the Wonderland Murders on Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this, or find a link in the episode notes. If you want to hear the entire series ad-free before anyone else, head to Wondery.com/plus. That's WONDERY.com/PLUS.